Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, two guys who came together for one common purpose, to think deeply about sport and faith. They are sports scholars, they're coaches, and they're competitive athletes, or at least they were. And together, they've created Sport Faith Life, a conversation that meets at the intersection of sport and faith.
Today on Sport Faith Life, we speak with Matt Seeger. After degrees in journalism from Cornell and Syracuse, Matt became a sports reporter for several publications on both the East and West coasts of the U.S. As a Jewish believer in Jesus, who converted later in life, Matt has also been drawn to researching and writing columns about Christian athletes. He just published a book called The God Squad, about a team of born-again baseball players on the San Francisco Giants in the late 70s. We're really excited to talk to Matt, so let's get started.
Well, we're so excited to have Matt Seeger with us this morning. Matt, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about sport in your life.
Okay, Chad, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I've always loved baseball. I mean, I've got pictures of me as a three-year-old with my dad, you know, showing me how to swing the bat, and just grew up playing Pee Wee League, Little League, Babe Ruth League, and I played high school baseball. So baseball was really the sport. I dabbled in basketball, but baseball was really the sport I loved. I had the privilege as a senior in high school in northern New Jersey, where our team won the league championship with a 16-2 record. It was very exciting because on the last game of the season in the league, we had to play our rival, and whoever won would grab league honors. And I hit my first and only home run, and we went on to win that game. And then we kept that same team together for the summer, the Connie Mack League, and we went to the Connie Mack World Series in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so that was a big thrill. And so that kind of was the end of my baseball career. But so I always loved baseball. And then when I was in college at Cornell, I decided to write for the Cornell Daily Sun and cover sports. And that's really where my journalism career began. And I covered the varsity baseball team and the basketball team. But again, baseball has always been my first love. And I credit a lot of that to my dad. Yeah.
We will further explore that in a few minutes. Tell us a little bit about faith in your life.
Okay. Well, I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus. And I did not grow up really having a religious background at all. And so throughout college, you know, I never really had God in my life. It was a couple of years after college where some remarkable things happened, and I became a believer as a Jew, what some people call a Messianic Jew, completed Jew, whatever. But let me put it this way. I didn't really appreciate my Jewishness until I came to know Jesus. So, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, that's a fascinating story, I'm sure. And maybe you'll give us an opportunity to hear that. First, I just want to say I love the baseball reference. I think a lot of us can say that our dads got us into baseball early on. If you're in the United States, certainly, and maybe in some other, there's a number of countries that resonate with baseball. And the fact that you can remember your one home run is just tells you about sports.
Yes.
That's awesome. Yes. So I wonder, Matthew, could you tell us one thing about you that would help our listeners get to know?
Sure. I'd like to elaborate a little bit on, how a Jew came to Jesus, if I might. And, so like I say, I was raised in a secular Jewish home. So culturally, we are very Jewish, but I didn't go to synagogue. I didn't have bar mitzvah, but we knew we were Jews culturally. But so I really had no foundation at all in my religion. And after college at, after Cornell, I went to Syracuse University to the Newhouse School and I got my master's in magazine journalism. So things were going really well for me on the outside. I landed my first job as a sports reporter in Cortland, New York, for their daily newspaper, The Standard. And so, like I say, externally, things were going well, but internally, I was kind of a mess and was kind of spiraling down into depression. And through that, through it all, backpedal just a little, while at Syracuse, I got really sick with mononucleosis, went to the student clinic and was assigned randomly a doctor to see me. And her name was Indira Koshy. And I later found out that she was the wife of the evangelical chaplain at Syracuse University. And she said to me, she said, "I don't usually do this, but I feel like I should with you." She said, "Did you know that your name is in the Bible, in the New Testament?" And I said, "No," because I'd never seen a New Testament. And so she showed me the Gospel of Matthew, and she told me that God loved me and this and that. And I took that little Gideon's New Testament back with me to home and read, especially at the end, they had the Psalms. I read the Psalms. It was very comforting. But when I got better, I kind of forgot the whole thing, went my merry way, spun into more depression. And but along the way, I had met some other Christians talk about Jesus. So I decided I'd pick up a Bible and read it. And it's kind of funny looking back now, but I decided the first book I should read was the book of Job, because I heard that he had a lot of problems. So that's where I began. And I kept reading. And what happened was I started reading the New Testament. And I really got intrigued with Jesus. But one night, I was sitting with a friend of mine, a Jewish friend, in my home around 10 o'clock at night. And I was saying to her, "Carol, I can kind of believe in God." And one reason I gave was that sometimes, it sounds kind of silly, but I said sometimes I'd be thinking about a person I hadn't seen in a while, and the phone would ring and it would be them, things like that, you know. And I said, "But I can't get around how a Jew can believe in Jesus." And now I'm not kidding, like, within 30 seconds after that, at 10 o'clock at night, the phone rang. And this was before cell phones. This was, you know, a landline. I didn't get many phone calls. And the phone rang, and I kind of looked at Carol like, "Oh, it's probably God calling, you know." So I pick up the phone, and the guy at the other end says, "Is Lisa there?" And I knew who Lisa was. She's somebody who used to live in that house but didn't anymore and had moved to Boston. So I said, "Well, no, Lisa doesn't live here." And I thought he'd hang up. And he said, "Well, I loaned her a book. I was trying to get it back." And I said, "Well, the book's not here. She's not here. Good night, you know." And he kept talking. And he said, "Well, the other reason I called is I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus. And I wanted to invite her to a lecture on campus by a Messianic Jewish scholar." And I just about dropped the phone, because here I was talking about coincidental phone calls and Jews believing in Jesus. And here I've got this guy on the other end of the line. So I said, "Okay, she's not here. Tell me, where is this lecture?" And I went to the lecture, a guy named Arnold Fruchtenbaum. I went up after to try to talk to him, but it was so crowded I couldn't. But I instead met this couple where the wife was a Messianic Jew. They invited me to their home Bible study. I began going there every Saturday, began going to their church, and then heard the gospel. And final story is, one night they showed a movie called The Thief in the Night about the rapture. Scared me to death. And I turned to my friend Mike. I was sitting next to him. I said, "Mike, I don't know. When all this comes down, I just want to be on God's side. Would you just pray with me?" And that's when I invited God in my life. And then gradually noticed a change that had come from having Jesus with me. So that's how it happened. Yeah.
Well, Matthew, first, I encourage you to tell that story, as, and I'm sure you do, as often as you can. It gave me chills. I love it. It was a fantastic story.
Thanks.
The fact that Jesus himself, it was, you know, the centerpiece of it, but I also love the what the world would call coincidence,
exactly.
Right? These affirmations in our lives that God speaks to us in many ways. Jesus is obviously the exact representation of God, and so we have that, and we have the scripture. We have the compelling spirit that he gives us, but those circumstances, those coincidences can be really affirming. Yep. So that's a great story. Thanks so much for sharing it.
Thank you.
And what kind of brought you to us is you wrote a book, which we'd love to talk about in just a second, but I guess I'm curious. I mean, you're near the end of your career and you're writing this book. I'd like to know how your writing has gone through your career. What have you been writing about?
Sure.
Mostly sports, or tell us some other things about what you write.
Sure. Well, what happened, Brian, is I had that job in Cortland, but I lost it as a result of my personal problems. Not that I got fired. I just moved on and hoped to get back into the sports writing business, but it's a little difficult when you've been out of it for a couple of years and they don't know you. So I worked in the transportation area for about 23 years, but all the time that I was doing that, I was looking to write testimonies of Christian athletes. So I continued to do that. So I was always writing, you know, one way or the other. But when I retired from my transportation gig when I was 55 years old, I took a job with the Jews for Jesus organization here in San Francisco. And I was a writer and an editor of their magazine called Issues, which at that time went out to about 23,000 unsaved Jewish people, as well as to a number of Jewish believers. But that was a real ministry for me because I was able to pick the topics, interview people, write some of the stories or assign the others. And I knew what was going out into the homes of unsaved Jews who were interested enough to sign up for this free magazine. So I did that for a number of years. When my time ended there, just in the last few years, I took a job with the Vacaville, California newspaper called The Reporter. And it was kind of neat because it bookended my career as a sports writer because I had begun in Cortland covering high school sports. And then here I was in Vacaville back doing the high school sports beat. And I loved it. And it also, they also gave me the freedom to write columns whenever I wanted to. So I wrote some columns and finished up my career there. So I'm now retired again, and I guess I still have the writing bug because then I decided to write a book. So that's what happened.
So writing's been at least an interest, right, throughout the entirety of your career, whether right. You were doing it or not, right, as your vocation. Talk a little bit about the differences between beat writing and writing a column, and what were some of the things that kind of infused your spirit as you were writing about those two different sort of genres, I suppose, within the
sure.
media?
Well, beat writing, I love the high school scene because the kids are so enthusiastic and they're thrilled to be interviewed and they have no filter and they have no attitude or ego really, you know, and they just tell you how it is. And so I got to know the kids and, you know, I think they appreciated the articles and, I just love that scene. And it was mostly, it was primarily a high school sports scene. Now, the column writing, it is a whole different thing, but I love that also. And it came at a fortuitous time, at least for me, not for the country, but with COVID happening, they wouldn't let me go into work, especially because I'm a senior and they're concerned about, you know, my health. So they wouldn't let me go into work for a long time during COVID, which gave me a lot of opportunity to do the column writing. And I wrote so many columns about baseball. That was, it was like, they just opened the door wide for me. And so I opined about, I'll tell you, I'm a traditionalist. You know, I don't even like the designated hitter rule. And so When Rob Manfred started to add all these things, like these extra inning games where the guy starts at second base, I hate that. And then when he had like the seven inning doubleheaders, I hated that too. And so I would just rail against some of these change agents that I saw happening in baseball. And then I would also, reminisce about certain events in baseball that meant a lot to me. I did all sorts of stuff. One thing that I did, I have this, I love computer baseball games. I have one called Old Time Baseball. It's got all the teams in history, basically. And so what I did, I created a tournament, and I asked local readers to pick what they thought was their favorite team. And I had eight participants, and we did a double elimination tournament. And I played all the games on my simulated old-time baseball game and then would write up the game stories in the newspaper. And then one of the guy who picked the 1975 Cincinnati Reds won the tournament. And I think it's probably one of the greatest teams of all time. So he picked a good one. So I did all sorts of stuff mm-hmm. when I did the columns. It was fun. Yeah.
Oh, I love that idea. I guess I'm wondering, you mentioned San Francisco. Are you a Giants fan?
I am, but having grown up in the New York, New Jersey area, I'm a diehard Mets fan as well. And funny story is, my dad was a Giants fan in New York, you know, going back to Mel Ott and Bill Terry and those guys. And but the Giants left in 1958, as did the Dodgers. So there's no National League team in New York until the Mets came in 62. Hmm. So my dad became a Mets fan and took me to the games, but he still loved the Giants. So in 1963, they had a Willie Mays night at the Polo Grounds where the Mets played, where Willie used to play. And the place was packed just to honor Willie. And I said to my dad, who are you going to root for, Dad? You know, you got these two teams. He said, I'm going to root for Willie Mays and the Mets. And so,
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm tempted to ask about Barry Bonds, but I'm just going to leave that hanging for a minute.
Okay.
And I wonder, you also mentioned you mentioned your interest in player testimonials, and maybe that will help us launch into your current project or your current book. Yeah. Talk a little bit about what drew you to this idea that, you know, I like to hear athletes talk about their faith.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, when I got saved, it was such a dramatic change in my life that and pair that with my love of baseball, I began to notice, you know, some athletes who would mention their faith or write books even. And I thought, you know, their stories are going to captivate young people, especially who look up to these guys. And I thought, I wrote a number of articles for youth magazines like Focus on the Family has one called Breakaway. Back to the Bible had one called Teen Quest. Christian Service Brigade had one called Venture. And that's where I sent a lot of my articles because I felt young people are looking up to these guys already and women. And let's tell them about their faith, you know, to kind of inspire them. And that's kind of how it went. Now, with the book, what happened there, if I can get into that, was I still always had that interest. And back in 1980, I was now living in San Francisco. And I should mention that the reason I first moved to San Francisco, initially I worked with Jews for Jesus on their missionary staff. So I came out here in 1980. That's where I met my wife and got married and began to raise a family. That's what brought me to San Francisco because their headquarters are here. But anyway, around that time, 1980, I was reading the local columnists for the San Francisco Chronicle and the San Francisco Examiner. And one of them, Lowell Cohn, and another, Glenn Dickey, were taking shots at the God Squad. And, you know, these born-again Christians on the Giants. And I thought it was a bit over the top, sort of bothered me, you know. And so what happened was a guy who's now my brother-in-law, he had started a chapter of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, FCA, at his high school and continued it into his college years. And they would he would invite speakers to his home where they held the meetings. And somehow they were able to invite some of the Giants, and they got Gary Lavelle, who was one of the God Squad members, to speak. And they invited me there, and I listened to Gary. And then I asked Gary if I could interview him for an article for the Fellowship of Christian Athletes magazine. And so at the same time, I was reading an article about Gary Lavelle written by Lowell Cohn called "Can Satan Save the Giants?" in which Lowell suggested that since the Giants weren't doing so well with God on their side, one of them should sell their soul to the devil, which of course was satire, but you know, it bothered me. And so after writing Gary's testimony, I said to him, "Gary, this whole thing would make a very interesting book." And we sat in his home and talked about it, and we were both interested, but neither of us really had the time to devote to it. So I forgot about the whole thing until 40 years later, when I was retired and thinking about what should I write about, I said, you know, I wonder if these God Squad guys are still around. And sure enough, Gary was and some other guys. And so that's how the book came about. I went back 40 years in time and wrote about that whole phenomenon of the God Squad. Yeah.
That brings in the idea that there's some history to it, but also it's still fresh, right? There are still some things that just kind of continue to itch us.
Yeah.
And so you scratch that. That's really exciting. Give us a little bit of a synopsis of like the book itself, right?
Sure.
So it's about the San Francisco Giants, a group of devoted Christians and their experiences, but give us a teaser.
Sure. Well, you have to understand a bit about the background of that time is that prior to the God Squad, it was very rare that Christian athletes spoke up about their faith to the media. Just really didn't happen. There were pockets of believers, like the New York Yankees had Bobby Richardson and a few other guys who formed the initial what became Baseball Chapel. But these were sort of private meetings, you know, maybe in a weight room or training room, or sometimes they even met in a hotel. But it wasn't really an evangelistic sort of thing. It was just for them to have something, sort of a church service on a Sunday because they couldn't go to church. But nobody was really outspoken. So in the 70s, which I lived through, there was a lot of spiritual interest, and it went in all different directions. A lot of young people got interested in Eastern religions, and but along with that was what they called the Jesus Revolution. And you may have seen the movie they made about how it started in Southern California, but it kind of swept up through California to Northern California, and then among all these guys on the Giants. And it really began with Gary Lavelle, who became a believer in 1976 during winter ball. A guy named Tom Johnson from the Minnesota Twins shared his faith with Gary. Gary got saved, came back to his club, and just gradually people noticed a difference in Gary, who used to be kind of a hothead and now was very composed and at peace. And he just quietly, he didn't preach, but he'd share his faith with these guys. And before you knew it, they had 8 to 10 guys. It ended up being about 11 guys who were born-again Christians on the Giants. And so what happened was the Giants had been a really middling team for most of the 70s. In 71, they had made the playoffs. They hadn't been back, and it had become barely a 500 team until out of the blue in 1978, for a few reasons, they started playing really well. One of the reasons was they got Vita Blue from the Oakland Athletics. Vita Blue, who had won three world championships with the Oakland A's and became kind of the stabilizing force on that great Giants rotation. Anyway, they started winning. And at the same time that they were winning, you had all these guys who had become believers. And so when the interviewers came after the game, it was very common for them to say, "Oh, just thank God that he gave me this ability to play this great game, et cetera, et cetera." And they weren't usually saying, "God won the game for us," anything like that. They were just, thanking God for having that he was in their life and gave them the peace, that they needed to perform, stuff like that. So the press didn't raise any objection because the Giants were winning. And what were they going to say? They just let them talk. Occasionally, reported it. But in 1979, the Giants got off to the horrendous start. And the local press, looking for a scapegoat, decided that it was the Christians, because the Christians now with Jesus in their life had become passive. And winning was not that important to them. And the worst of it was that Bob Knepper, who was a starting pitcher for the Giants, he gave up a home run to lose a game. And they claimed that when the manager came to took him out of the game, manager Dave Bristol, and Dave said, "What's happening out here with that home run?" And Bob said, "Oh, it was God's will." Now Bob never said that. I interviewed Bob extensively. And they asked Dave Bristol if he ever said that, and Dave said no. And no manager in the world would forget that if it had happened. So what happened was the press just began to bash the born-again Giants and blame them for losing. And it went on. They blamed them as they went along into the 80s. They blamed them for getting managers fired. And it became a national story. So people who didn't know the truth began to spread that God's will story about Bob Knepper. They began to spread the other stories about them getting managers fired. And you had luminaries like Peter Gammons of the Boston Globe and Dick Young of the New York Daily News spreading this mythology about the God Squad. And so it became a national, to me, a travesty of journalism, poor journalism. Yeah.
It's fascinating when you just start telling that story, because so many of the things that you talk about continue. I mean, that was half a century ago, right? Yeah. And those things continue today. The whole idea of the press kind of taking something and running with it, fake news, right?
Of course.
And then all sorts of dilemmas for the Christian athlete in terms of privacy and speaking out. And nobody caring unless you're winning. But when you're winning, the message is going to be amplified and scrutinized. And so those are all things that the sport and Christian intersection continues to grapple with this time. I wonder, do you get to the end of the book and sort of draw some of these takeaways?
Yeah, well, one thing, Brian, is that, what happened is the Giants traded away all of the born-again players by 1984. And some of the players themselves think it was kind of a conspiracy to get rid of them. It's hard to prove that, because the Giants did have a number of born-again players later. In fact, in the late 1980s, I have a whole chapter called God Squad 2, which focuses on a new cadre of born-again Christians on the team, including Dave Dravecki, who you may or may not know about. But Dravecki had a very strong testimony because he came back from cancer and a year later pitched this incredible game to beat the Cincinnati Reds at Candlestick Park, which every Giant fan still remembers. But when the Giants came back with his second God Squad, I think the first God Squad had kind of loosened up the media so that they were less distrustful of the Christians and more willing to just let the Christians tell their story without bias. And so you find a number of the reporters who were like that. And so I think that perhaps the God Squad was instrumental in kind of breaking this evangelical barrier, you know, so that future believers were able to speak up. And I think also what happened is that the believers became a little more knowledgeable on how to talk to the press without dulling their witness, but also without being too much in your face, you know. So I think the Christians learned that. I know Bob Knepper did because, ironically, Knepper was traded away to the Houston Astros in the early 80s, but he came back to the Giants in the late 80s. So he had the perspective of being with both of these God Squad teams. And he said that he learned to be a little more judicious in his comments. But I think also the press learned to accept the fact that there are Christians in sports and they're going to speak up. And this is just a fact of life now, whereas it hadn't been a fact of life in the 70s with the God Squad. So I hope that journalists have become a little more tolerant of hearing this from the athletes. I hope. Yeah.
You mentioned, Matt, Dave Gervecki, and I had told you in an email earlier, I remember as being a young kid.
Oh, yeah.
When Dave Gervecki was going through his experiences and having him come to my hometown and speak at a mega church in my hometown, and everyone, my friends and I, were all there and got his autograph and, mm-hmm. you know, read his book, but had no, you know, being elementary school students, had no real idea what he was actually getting at right there. But it leads me to think about the last question I have for you, which is having to do with location, right? So in middle America, at that point in time, the mid 80s, or late 80s, early 90s, Dave Gervecki's story resonated pretty powerfully. And while there would have been resentment, you know, middle America, just like potentially, you know, Texas, would have been a little bit more sympathetic to an athlete speaking out about their faith than potentially, you know, some larger urban areas. So I'm just curious what role San Francisco plays in all of this.
Yeah, very good question, Chad. And I deal with that in the first chapter of my book, giving the cultural climate in San Francisco. And of course, you know, San Francisco back in the late 60s and into the 70s became a haven for disaffected people, especially for the gay population, who felt that they could be themselves, you know, here without condemnation. And so it attracted that that kind of those kind of folks who wanted that you know, sort of freedom, but also with it came a lot of fear, I think, of Christianity. And you know, you had groups like the Moral Majority, which Jerry Falwell started, and there was some degree. I'm not accusing the Moral Majority per se, but there was some degree of fire and brimstone sort of Christianity, and certainly I believe in hell, you know, but the way that the gospel was presented, I think, would have turned a lot of people off, you know. And so in San Francisco, there is a great contrast between people of faith and a very liberal community, which believed in gay rights, abortion rights, drug legalization, all the things that evangelical Christian would not be in favor of. And But I have to commend people like Gary Lavelle, and you'll read about it in my book, but he was a good spokesman, I think, for Christianity. And when he was interviewed, he made a point of saying, it's false when you accuse me of hating homosexuals, stuff like that. He said, that is far from the truth. He said, if a gay person needed my help, I'd be the first to help them. But if I'm asked whether it's sin or not, I have to say, yes, it is, because that's what the Word of God says. And so he was able to strike a good balance. But like you say, San Francisco, the reason that this God Squad thing became controversial was primarily because of the location. I mean, something like this, had it happened in Texas, a bunch of guys on the team becoming Christians, I don't think it would have been a big deal, because people would have said, well, we're all Christians down here, you know, one way or the other. But in San Francisco, you know, where the Church of Satan was actually founded, they have a guy named Anton LaVey founded the Church of Satan, which Gary Lavelle pointed out very calmly in an interview. It was like oil and water here. You know, it was going to be, sparks were going to fly one way or the other in San Francisco. Yeah.
Well, Matthew, what a marvelous service you've done here in terms of telling the stories of people and accurately portraying the time, the culture, the sport, and how they all sort of blended together. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you had the access that was needed to be able to do that. You were able to talk to the people directly and find the truth and dig into the truth, which I think is, you know, what makes it a fresh book about an older time. I think that's a really exciting opportunity, and we're just really grateful that you put the work into it and we're able to pull it all together at this time. If folks are interested in finding your book, reading about this, learning more about you, where do they go?
Okay, thanks. Just punch in my name, Matt Seeger, Siegger, and punch it into Google along with God Squad, and all the venues will pop up. It's available on Amazon. I should point out there's two versions of the book. I got 13 photos from the Giants that are in the book. In one version of the book, those photos are in color, and that version is a little more expensive as a result of the color. But there's another version of the book with the same photos in black and white. You can save a little money if you want to order that version. But you'll find it on Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, Thrift Books. All of those venues will pop up if you put in my name and the God Squad.
Well, again, thanks, Matt, for connecting with us, for telling your story here on Sport Faith Life, and also telling the story of all these athletes who you know, lived through a particular time and left a mark. They really did leave a mark. So we're very grateful for your work, and we just love the fact that you came on to join us.
Well, thanks so much for having us, Brian and Chad, having me. it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sport Faith Life podcast, a conversation at the intersection of sport and faith. Read the corresponding blog post and learn more about us at sportfaithlife.com. Listen to more of our podcasts on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And follow us on social media to stay up to date with everything sport, faith, life.